true crime podcast where best friends and next-door neighbors, Willow and Lillian, spill the tea on murder, mysteries, and other things that go bump in the night. So get your favorite teacup ready, and let's get into it.
Welcome to Cruelty Podcast. This is Lillian. With me is Willow.
Hello.
Hello. You may be wondering, why wasn't there a Maris Monday this Monday? Well, I'll tell you, because Mercury retrograde started and fucked everything up. That's why.
It's every time.
Every time.
It's every Something. Time.
It's, I expected it.
It's like the day the pre-shadow starts.
What happened was, is my computer could not, could not connect to the internet. It would connect for about 3 minutes, and then it would lose it, and then I restarted, reset, and after about an hour, I was just like, you know what? Fuck this. And I went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't worry. Because every time I miss an episode, some of y'all message me like, have you quit? No. No. I just had technical difficulties. And I'm so busy, I just forget to post on social media. Not right. Quit. Forget.
Right.
Eh? And
not quit. Forget.
We're both like, I just started a new job, and Willow has a job, and Maris now started a job. So we have a lot going on. Please just bear with me. I'm getting there. I promise.
Mm-hmm. Same for me. I still have all those photos to get to.
Well, that's just not happening. Yeah. You might as well just start
anew. I've done a little bit at a time.
But we'll just start anew, like with the new episodes. But that's a yeah. discussion for
Sorry,
not on
this
the radio.
Business.
Yeah.
just guilt riddled.
This is still within Murder for Hire. Y'all, this will be a shorter episode, but it's a good one. So,
yeah. To preface that, there are no documentaries on this case. There are no videos. There are no, like, in-depth research articles or anything. There's one Vice article and then a bunch of, like, random news articles about it. So I've kind of pieced the story together just through those articles. So, you know, that's why I don't have, like, a whole bunch of background information or...
And is it more recent?
No.
Oh, that's weird.
No,
usually
this is
we can dig
the crime happened in 92. It literally, and it's so weird because this is such like a niche crime. Like this never happens and it's very rare. And you would think that it would be talked about more often.
Yeah.
But it's not at all.
No.
So yeah, this is the very rare case of Britain's first and only female contract killer. Lately, it seems like there's been a rise in women taking ranks in cartels and extremist groups, which I have kind of been doing like a lot of like background study on just because I find it fascinating. I find any time that there are women in a particularly like masculine role, like
male dominated is the word you're looking for, because masculine role doesn't exist.
You know what I mean?
I'm just putting that
absolutely
out there.
Absolutely. But you know, like whenever you see like a female serial killer as opposed to all of the male serial killers out there and all of that kind of stuff, it kind of just like creates like a micro focus on it for me. I don't know. I just kind of want to know more about that person. So I've been, you know, just looking for these types of stories lately, just gravitating towards them. And so I found this story and I thought it would be appropriate, especially because March is Women's History Month.
Yeah.
And with the theme of contract killers, hitmen, that kind of thing, I just noticed that when trying to find a case for this month, it's so much like either child messing with children type things where it's like the children got messed with by their father and so they hired a hit on their dad. I see so many stories like that. And mm-hmm. then a whole bunch of, you know, women wanting to kill their husbands, you know, for insurance or whatever, or, you know, lovers and things like that. I wanted to do something different, a little different. So, 25-year-old Maori bartender Te Rangamaria Ingarimu.
Whoa, that name is interesting.
It is, and as a researcher, like, not having anyone say it. I found one podcast that talked about it, but I don't know if they were saying it correctly. So, apologies if I butcher this. I know it is a really prominent Maori name, and so I, you know, like to be respectful.
I just liked it.
Isn't it?
It's pretty.
It does, like, a fun cadence.
It did. It had a
mouth.
Fun cadence.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. She worked at a pub in London called the Carnarvon Castle Pub in Camden, which was an old pub. It's been open since the late 1800s. And I've seen like some mixed reviews as to whether or not this place is open still, but Google says it is. And I've heard other people say that the building doesn't exist anymore, but Google says it's open tomorrow at 10 a.m. So I don't know. I was just, yeah, kind of concerned with their lack of pepper on the food, but I had to do a little bit extra like side quest research on this pub itself because I could not figure out how to say the name, because it's an old medieval, it's from an old medieval castle. And it's one of those words that has like the AE pronunciations. And, you know, as an American person, like we don't use that those kinds of sounds very often, at least in words. So, yeah, I kind of did a little bit of research on like what this castle was, where the name came from. And I actually found that there is a town in Australia called Carnarvon, which is spelled differently but said the same. And it stems back from, like, the castle was built for King Edward I in the 11th century. And I also found some other places called Carnarvon in South Africa. And I'm just wondering if this is, like, kind of one of those colonization type things.
Yes.
You know, where
that's exactly
like,
what
like
it
it's
is.
It's a medieval castle, but it's called all these places in colonized land.
Like there's how many Jamestowns?
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But I just wonder, because this particular pub is known for like its like Kiwi people like being there, people from Australia and New Zealand who go to London, end up migrating at this pub in particular. And I just kind of wonder if maybe it's because the name is similar to a place that they've been and they're used to and they're comfortable, because it is a pretty prominent Aboriginal town. So I don't know, but I just kind of found like the different parallels kind of similar, because she's from New Zealand. Another person in this story is from New Zealand. There's a lot of like New Zealand ties to this one particular place in London. Which I just kind of find a little fascinating. So Te Rangimaria Ingarimu grew up in a middle-class family, a Christian household in a small village in New Zealand. Not much is written about her home life. It seems that she lived a fairly normal life and a normal upbringing. If anything, it seems as though her parents were probably pretty supportive, because she was involved in all kinds of extracurricular activities. She excelled in school. She got amazing grades. She seemed to be just an overall happy and exciting kid. She was extremely intelligent and adventurous. She spoke fluent Japanese. She loved sports. She played hockey, netball, and she surfed, not just for fun, but competitively as well. She served in several international competitions.
Thanks.
So this is a very active, very intelligent,
well-rounded person.
Well-rounded. She was just so happy and bright and like exciting to be around. She moved to London in her 20s to further her degrees in chemistry and physics. So
hell yeah, girl.
Yeah, she was going for her master's in London. So ridiculously intelligent. She was described as bright, bubbly, and very personable and good company. At the pub, they called her Sparky, which I feel like every bar has to have a Sparky.
Yeah.
Here in Eureka, we have one, and I think we've had at least five. But they're always like these old men with really big, long beards, not like this tiny little short, bubbly, big, smiling Maori woman, which I just think is really sweet. She was basically everybody's bartender, like everybody's favorite bartender. They would always go to see Sparky. One day while bartending, her friend and regular at the pub, 20-year-old Daith Bridges, came up and sat at her bar like he did all the time. They were like, quote unquote, brother and sister, as she would put it. Daith was also from New Zealand. Having been born in London, he grew up in New Zealand, and he was from a very, like, prominent, well-respected family. His father was a school teacher, and Daith moved back to London, just like Te Rangimaria. After he finished school in New Zealand, he moved back to London. And there he started working at the exact same bar with Te Rangimaria. And then after he kind of got settled in London, he worked at the bar for a little bit. He met some roofing contractors that were regulars there, and he joined their team. So he left the bar and ended up working, you know, for better pay as a contractor. He ended up working for contractors Graham Woodhatch and Paul Tubbs. Now, that day that he came and walked up to her bar, sat down, they started talking as usual, and Daith mentioned Graham. She knew who he was, but she didn't know him as well as she knew Daith. The contractors would always come to the pub after a long day's work, ready to kick back, you know, throw back some beers. And so she knew him through that context, but she didn't know him, She just thought that, yeah, y'all are friends, right? She thought that she knew Daith pretty well. But I don't think she would have ever expected what he was about to ask her. Daith told Tay Rangamaria that Graham Woodhatch had stolen thousands of dollars from the roofing business accounts and now was threatening to kill someone. And she couldn't take that. Daith straight up asked Tay Rangamaria to knock him off, quote unquote.
I will tell you this, like, you got to know somebody at least a little bit to be able to ask him to do something like that. So something in her, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There had to have been signs beforehand. This can't just to come out of nowhere.
She, I'll say this because I'll mention it again later, but she at least needed a photograph of him later on. So she didn't know Graham that well, but Daith, I couldn't get a clear response from the articles that I read, but one of them, either Tay Rangamaria or Daith, lived above the bar. I want to say that she lived above the bar, but I'm not for sure. But either way, one of them lived above the bar. So they were always seeing each other. They were always together.
I'm just saying something in one of their conversations previous must have led Daith to
wondering,
believe.
Yeah, you know? I'm wondering if Tay Rangamaria didn't believe that Daith would have been killed. You know what I mean?
I think maybe that's what she thought.
You know, because I don't think that she would just, as an intelligent,
exactly,
well-read woman, I don't think she would just walk up and shoot someone.
Know it all. I've worked at bars.
And the way this murder goes down is like, so, whoa, like, it's intense.
She had to have thought, like, the greater good would come from it.
Right.
More than just some stolen money.
And without even realizing, like truly knowing her character, later on you'll see that is her character. Like, you said it perfectly. Like, that is exactly how she would think you would expect. So she really doesn't talk about her motive here. They agreed on a total of $7,000.
That's not a lot. To, like, murderate somebody.
No. And it's 1992, so, I mean,
it's like, goes a little further than it would today, but not a lot.
Yeah.
Not enough.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'd expect, God. Like, I'm thinking, what would it take?
Right.
Maybe it'd take, like, 50 grand for me to bust a
cab. Bare minimum. And in a quiet place. In a non-public place.
Uh-huh.
See where I'm going? Like,
this... So there had to have been more going on. That's all I'm saying.
Right. There had to have been. There has to be more to this case than we don't know. And it's like stories like this, I would totally be a journalist for. I would totally go to wherever she's being locked up at and, like, do interviews and kind of poke around and ask questions, because this is the kind of shit I want to know. But yeah, it just baffles me that this 25-year-old physicist bartender with absolutely no criminal background, probably has never hurt anyone a day in her life, just agreed to this plan.
Yeah.
So Paul Tubbs, the other contractor, was also in on this. He came from a lower class background. He moved out of his home at 15 and from there built his roofing business from the ground up. And that was just kind of like his whole personality. Like, he was this hardworking, very callous, build-it-yourself type. He was allegedly very jealous of his partner, his business partner, Graham, who seemed to have had it all. He had the nice house, the nice Porsche, and was apparently a damn good roofer. And everyone talked about how fucking awesome he was. And after going into business with him together in the 80s, by the 90s, Paul Tubbs had realized Graham wasn't the businessman that he thought he was. His over extravagant and lavish lifestyle was way above his means. He was basically going from one bad business deal to the next, and he was just drowning in debt. He was volatile, prone to explosive anger, and by May of 1992, Paul Tubbs had had enough. When he found that $50,000 was missing from the business accounts, he reported it to the police. This issued several civil suits, and when he did that, Graham just fucking lost it. Like, he just lost it. Graham threatened to kill a female staff member, which only made matters worse. Paul and Daith did not want to fuck around and find out about this. Like, they didn't want to think that Graham was bluffing. They just wanted to stop him at all costs, because what if he wasn't?
I mean, okay. Like, yeah, the stealing sucks.
I think they assumed they were going to be next, is what I'm assuming.
That's what I would guess. Or that he must have acted, Graham must have acted really violent and wild ahead of time to make them believe these threats.
Right.
Because otherwise, it just cut my losses and give it a shrug, you know? Right. Like, it ain't worth killing. 50 grand ain't worth nobody dying over.
Right. And, like, that's all I have as far as information on his behavior. Yeah, you know what I mean?
At least so much.
Like, there's not even interviews on people who knew him or anything like that. So I can't say how long this went on, but I know from the late 80s. Up to 1992, it had been a progressive decline in his behavior. And I'm just assuming when they say explosive and volatile and prone to anger and fits of rage.
I guess just because so many people have told me they're going to kill me.
Right.
That, like, I'm just unfazed. I'm like, sure you are, bud.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I also don't know how he threatened this girl. I don't know if he held a knife to her throat.
Yeah, we don't know.
Or if he just said that.
Like, I'm saying, you're saying this, but it must...
Right.
But it must have been much, much worse.
Right.
Than just those words and those...
It had to have been.
It had to have been. Or else it wouldn't have driven these people to this.
To hire a hit.
Yeah.
To go to their bartender.
This case don't make no sense to me.
It really doesn't. So, yeah, I wonder if, you know, there's that thing with bartenders. It's the same with hairdressers and your nail artist. Like, it's just those types of people hold the secrets.
Oh, sure.
So I'm wondering how much she actually knew for how long, and if maybe she was already so invested in knowing what was going on in this
that's
story.
That's what I was implying earlier.
That maybe they couldn't trust anybody else. She was the only person they could trust. I don't know. It's just so wild.
She's dumb to me.
She is the last person I would ask to kill someone.
My bartender to kill, like, my business partner.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not what I'm going to do.
She was given a front of $1,500. Some sources say it was $3,000, but most sources say it was $1,500. She said that she was going to be using that initial front of money to purchase a mobile home once she got in New Zealand. And then she set out on her mission. The day before the hit was to go down, Daith gave her a gun and some bullets wrapped in a towel. I don't know why it was wrapped in a towel. He told her to shoot him 4 times, twice in the head and twice in the chest. Now, Tay Rangamaria didn't know 38-year-old Graham that well, so he briefed her on, like, what he looked like, what his mannerisms are, you know, how tall he is, gave her a picture of him, and told her that Graham was scheduled for hemorrhoid surgery and recovery, like a recovery stay, at Hampstead's Royal Free Hospital, and where exactly in the hospital she could find him. So the day of the murder... The day came that Tay Rangamaria was to commit this hit. She tucked the firearm in her coat and went into the hospital. That's the thing about this case. It's like, why would you shoot someone in a hospital where there is all kinds of staff members everywhere?
I don't know. That's weird.
That is the last place I would want to be.
Shooting somebody.
It's so bizarre.
Shoot him in a dark alley.
Girl, she would have gotten away with it, though. That's the thing. Like, maybe they knew something about Tay Rangamaria that we don't know, because She almost got away with this.
Dang.
Yeah. So the day came. She walks into the hospital with a firearm in her coat. She ends up getting lost in the hospital, which made her nervous. So she just kind of left without making a scene. She goes home. She regains her courage. And the next day she tries again, this time in a disguise. This time she's dressed as a man with her hair.
I was fitting to say, that would be what I'd do.
Mm-hmm. She had her hair pulled back, an oversized coat on. She looked much bigger than she was in real life. And Tay Rangamaria entered the hospital and found Graham. He was talking on the hospital's payphone, just completely unaware of her, completely unaware of what was going on, just chilling. She walked up to him, brandished the gun, fired at close range, twice in the face, twice in the chest.
How you do?
Crying, she later said in court, quote, I had my hand on the gun and it took off the safety catch. I was pacing up and down, deciding whether or not to do it. Then something snapped and I did it. There were four shots, but I remember pulling the trigger only once. That shot hit him in the face. I remember seeing him rolling around on the floor screaming. He had his hands to his face.
Yeah, killing ain't fun. It's gross. And yeah. Traumatizing for all involved.
Everyone.
Well, I just don't recommend it.
That's what this podcast is about.
Indeed. So I don't have to make any more episodes. That's the moral of the story.
Don't
fucking
do
stop it.
Don't
do it. It's upsetting. It's upsetting.
Sit
to
down,
you and
eat
them.
Some cheese. Go to sleep.
Right? Maybe you hangry.
Mm-hmm.
There's always, mm-hmm. My point is, there's always a better solution. No. I'm going to guess, if you were to ask me, that Daith knew that she had some financial trouble.
Because
I can't imagine.
I can tell you she probably didn't have student loan debt.
No, because she was smart. Sorry. What the fuck is wrong with you? I'm done. I'm just going to go to bed. You finish your podcast. The bed's right over there. It's like right behind Willow. I can just climb up in there in my little blankies and take a nappy.
Yeah.
Now, in the United Kingdom, I know that a nappy is a diaper. That's not what I'm fucking talking about.
Oh, I forgot
don't
about that.
Don't get excited.
That.
I'm not talking.
Ew,
and when I say fanny,
excited.
I mean ass. I don't mean pussy. When I mean pussy, I say pussy or cooter.
Dear Lord.
I'm going to get in my bed and take a sleep, a small, short sleep.
A little sleepy.
Mm-hmm. Me eepy, and I can't handle anything anymore. So continue.
Okay, so as soon as the shots were fired, she was out of there. She was just booked it. She was gone. Boom, gone.
Well, that's what you do.
Tay Rangamaria immediately got on a flight to New Zealand, telling her friends back in London that she had gotten into a bad drug deal and had to go. Which, how they believed that.
Well,
like, I don't even think she did drugs.
Well.
She may have. I don't know.
I'm going to say she did. And I'm going to say maybe she did have some drug debt and that she wanted that money to pay it off. But did she even collect the rest of the money before fleeing?
No.
Motherfucker, this case pissed me off.
I know. I really, honestly, based on her character and her behavior and her background.
I have met people like this.
I do not think she did drugs. Like, she may have done a little coke because it was the times.
It was the 80s.
Everybody did. It was on everything.
I mean,
it was everywhere.
Hasn't done coke
if you,
at this point?
You're breathing the air. I mean, it's coke.
But here's my thing. Is I just think that maybe she's one of those people that just was very definite sense of right and wrong. Maybe had the tism. I don't know.
I also wonder if maybe she knew this female coworker that he threatened to kill.
I think we have too much variables, so I'm just going to listen to the rest of the story. I'm making no guess.
I mean, your guess is as good as mine.
I could make up all kinds of fucking
shit.
We
all could, because there's not enough information on this case.
Like, he wore blue and she fucking hated that.
But
I mean, we don't know.
I find her fascinating.
It's interesting, for sure.
So, she tells her friends that she was, in a drug deal gone bad. It didn't take long for police to piece together that Daith Bridges and Paul Tubbs were behind this murder. But they couldn't quite figure out who pulled the trigger with the evidence and the eyewitness accounts. Because they were like, well, that doesn't fit their description. That is, until they started asking people who were close to them who mentioned that they had been seen speaking to a certain bartender quite a bit, who just so happened to have mysteriously left town all of a sudden. And coincidentally was also the day of the murder that she just disappeared. They're like,
I'm no great mouse detective, but that's suspicious as fuck.
That needs to be a shirt. Yeah. Somebody please do that for me.
I mean, I can do it.
But it'll cost
you. Did any of y'all ever watch Great Mouse Detective?
It's one of the best.
Why'd they make that mouse sexy? That upsets me. It's a mouse. What is Disney trying to do? You know, people get mad at furries and then they do things like fucking Peter Pan with the sexy fox and then the sexy mouse. What?
That's how I felt about Feifel Goes West, his sister, in that. She's so pretty. I'm just like, wow.
I can't with that because, okay, so the song Somewhere Out There, you know, don't. It was played at my cousin John's funeral, and so I can't even think about that fucking movie anymore. Oh,
it's one of the best songs
in a cartoon. Like, in a cartoon. Of all of space and time. Yep. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, now I'm sad.
I know.
Why is the mouse hot? I'm upset. I'm not a furry. You should know this immediately. I mean, I have worn kitty cat ears, but it was for gross sexual reasons, not because I thought I was a cat.
Thin line. Thin line. It's blurry. It's not blurry a thin ass line.
Dumb hoe. God. I was just being slutty. Meow. You know? Whatever.
I'm a cat. Duh.
I wanted cream, and we know what that means.
Ew.
Hey, you had to fucking keep going. I was ready to stop. I was done. I was like, that's all there is to it. I'm just a big whore. And you just kept pushing it. So I had to clarify, because I'm not a furry, but I want to know why the mouse is sexy. Why is Basil, the great mouse detective, kind of sexy? Fucked up, and I don't like it. I don't appreciate it. Stop it. Stop. Stop making animals smoldery, like in The Lion King.
Oh, I was just about to say that. I know.
Why are they giving bedroom eyes? Yeah. Them lions gonna fuck. I thought that as a child watching that movie. And I was like, I don't want to see it. I've seen the nature shows. It's not gonna go well. People are gonna be screaming. Get me out of here. I'm with my dad, for fuck's sake. Disney, calm down. Not everything has to have a romance. That's all I'm saying. As someone who loves romance and sexy stuff in books and movies, I don't want the cartoon animals fondling each other or giving bedroom eyes. And I don't want the great mouse detective to be sexy. I just want him to solve crime. That's all. I got off on a tangent. I'm done now.
I'm so sorry.
I'm not.
I feel like that's something you need to bring up in therapy.
I can't afford therapy. I use the AI Claude 3 for therapy. It actually is very good. But then I get a wild hair and then I torture the robot until I break it. So there's something wrong with me.
You're doing your job, though. You're doing good.
I know. Fine.
So Tay Ringa Maria. So she, you know, she's back in New Zealand. She actually lived there for over a year without any problems whatsoever. And in August of 1993, detectives from London call her up, told her that she could either wait to be extradited or choose to come back to Britain on her own accord. She chose to go back.
Wow, I super wouldn't have.
Yeah, and that's what her lawyer said. Her lawyers were like, don't.
In New Zealand forever.
Please don't. And she was like, no, I am taking advice from the Lord.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Okay, here, I've got a new theory. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Mental illness, rampant mental illness with this woman.
Maybe. I mean, she was brought up in a Christian household. So here's the thing.
But then why would she have killed someone in the first place?
Because I think that she thought that she was doing... I'm sure she prayed about it. You know what I mean?
I'm buying the crazy card. You know what I mean? I think we had some rampant, untreated mental illness, some delusions, perhaps bipolar. That would explain a lot.
Possibly. We have no idea.
I don't know. I'm not a psychologist. Yeah. I'm an idiot.
But I think that the murder was weighing on her over that year in New Zealand. And at one point, she ended up just emotionally not being able to take that she killed someone. She went into her church. She was allegedly just very, she said that her heart was very heavy. And that she had extreme guilt for her crimes. She went there to seek forgiveness. She prayed to God, and God told her that she had to speak up about what she had done and that she had to face the consequences of her actions. So she said that she left that church feeling unburdened by that. And immediately after that is when she got the call from the detectives in London. And so she was like, I just gotta do this. I just gotta do it. And so she went back. She got a flight back to London. She proudly handed herself over to the courts, and the trial began later that next year in 1994. And by all accounts, she was completely sane, completely coherent, and completely...
Yeah, by the court's accounts, and we all know that don't mean shit. I know. That could be the legal definition, not the actual definition.
Right. And we don't know the extent of any type of analysis that was done. We don't know if she, like, spoke to any psychologists or anything like that. But from what she was witnessed being like in court, they said that she was just very calm. She cried, for sure. She really had to, like, choke back tears, but she recounted every single second of the entire event, basically. And and wanted to go into detail to kind of atone for her sins, I think, in her eyes. But she made no attempt to, like, defend herself in any way. She admitted to everything and showed extreme remorse. Just a few days into the trial, though, they had to postpone court because Daith Bridges, who was out on bail, had gone out to the bars that night and was walking home around 1 or 2 in the morning. And out of nowhere, these two men walked up and gunned him down.
Oh, Graham he had was, friends.
I know.
Okay, that adds a layer.
Right? So he was shot in the chest and the leg. Luckily.
Oh, he lived.
He lived. They got him to the hospital. They did life-saving surgeries on him. And the courts proceeded a few days later.
Damn, I'd just be like, oh, finish me off.
Right. Oh, fuck. But here's the thing. Paul Tubbs, the other guy that was in on this, he hadn't been released on bail yet. He had a bail, but he hadn't gotten it yet. And so they took his bail away because they assumed that this was a hit. Yeah. We don't see this a lot in American courts.
Away your bail to help you?
To help you. Yeah, no. They'll take away your bail if they think, you know.
To stick it to you.
Yeah. Definitely not to keep you safe. So, so they kept Paul Tubbs in jail until the proceedings were over, and they kept Daith Bridges safe as well. And by the end of the courts, all three of these individuals were handed down life sentences for the death of Graham Woodhatch. Yep. And they're still serving their time today.
I'll write her a letter and be like, bitch, why?
Exactly.
Come on.
What was going on? Like, what was going on? There has to be so much more sustenance to this story. And I want to know so bad. Like, I do want to write certain people letters in jail, like, eventually.
I'm not going to say who, but in my teens.
Yeah.
I did that a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I thought about writing inmates just, like, I almost said normal inmates, but you know what I mean. Like, not murderers.
I wrote murderers.
There are some people that I would like to write just so I can know, like,
and it wasn't like, I want y'all to know, it wasn't me being, look, trust, I was plenty edgy, just not that way. Mm-hmm. I just had a lifelong fascination with, but why is my question, but why have you done this?
Right.
Like, especially people who seem compelled to do it over and over and over and over. I still don't get it. Why is it broken up there? Please tell me. What happened? But you know what? You'll never get a satisfying answer, I have learned. Not even from the mouth of the person who did it. Instead, you'll just get weirdly hit on, and then you'll want to throw yourself into a volcano and die.
It just seems like so much just stems from childhood trauma. So much of it. I don't see that in this case at all.
Well, I don't know.
But we don't know.
I have just mountains of childhood trauma. And
exactly.
I don't want to kill anyone.
Exactly.
There's some people that I wish God would just delete.
Yes.
Sure.
A 1,000%. I don't want to get my hands dirty, but I'm not going to be upset if they leave.
Speaking of volcanoes, would you like to have an interesting fact about Pompeii?
What's that?
Pompeii was the Italian village in which Mount Vesuvius exploded and covered it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what Pompeii is?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I didn't know that's the fact. What's that? Like an idiot.
Oh, so. No. I meant, what's the fun fact? I thought that was your fun fact.
No, I just thought you were dumb. And I was like, oh, fuck's sake. And I was like, fine, I'm going to explain it. If you don't know what Pompeii is, dear listener, you're not an idiot. Don't worry. It's just fine. Me. It's just we grew up where volcanoes, quicksand, and the Bermuda Triangle were a big deal, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was born like right before Mount St. Helens erupted in Washington. I was kind of obsessed with it weirdly as a child. Anyway, the pyroclastic flows, as they were coming down through the streets of Pompeii, they would have killed you before they even touched you because they superheated the air and it would have boiled your brain in your skull, causing it to explode.
Wow.
So all of the bodies left in Pompeii and they're all contorted and you think they died in horrible agony. No, they were already dead. They were dead before the lava hit them. It's the heat caused their muscles to contract.
Oh.
In fact, they just got buried with ash and not lava anyway, but...
Yeah.
The lava came later.
Is the...
It was the ash, the hot ash that killed them.
Is the guy... Sorry, I'm Spit this way. But every time I think about Pompeii, I think about that one guy that was jacking it. Is that real or is that paper mache? Real. Okay.
He weren't jacking. And if he were, it's just the way his body contorted. He wasn't actually stroking his pecker.
It was big.
No.
Okay.
No, it wouldn't have. No, that's dumb. No, because I was just looking through some pictures of Pompeii and there was a dog and I was sad because it looked like it was in pain. But it like, when I say it boils your brain, it literally like liquefies it blah, 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 before you can even register anything's happened. So you're like, your body can't feel pain if the thing that feels the pain and interprets the signals is boiled and evaporated.
Yeah.
So I was hoping that would make everyone feel better about Pompeii. Yay! No one suffered. Although they were dum-dums and should have run away a long time ago, they had plenty of warning to get away.
Did they?
Oh, yes, they did.
Well, I mean, look at us with the...
spin it. Mm-hmm. Poof,
spin What's out. The one that's due to erupt 500 years ago?
Oh, no. Ding dong. Oh. Look, when they do like over 300,000 years, that don't mean shit.
Okay.
That don't mean shit.
Okay.
There's no way to time that kind of thing. You mean the caldera under Yellowstone.
Yellowstone,
And here's the deal. Even if we ran away, mm-hmm. okay, and went to like, I don't know, France or farther, whatever. It wouldn't make any difference. It's a world-ending event for human beings. Yeah. Extinction stuff.
Yeah.
So, hey, y'all, have you been watching Netflix lately? Have you watched The Three Body Problem? Because I read all the books.
No, what is it?
I'm about to explain it. Settle down. I was saying y'all, not you.
Jesus Christ.
Where'd you leave your brain today? Anyway. It's a science fiction show about alien invasion. Woo! That's it. The Three Body Problem refers to the aliens' solar system has three suns, which causes horrible catastrophes on their planet, like unstable weather patterns and such. So it's the Three Body Problem. Get it?
Got it? Good.
It's a problem. And so I've read the books, like I said, and I want to know who else has watched it so I can complain about it. I didn't like it. Why did they make all the scientists kind of hot? Because you know what scientists aren't?
Hot.
No, they nerds, yeah. man. Just give me some pencil neck nerds, yeah. chubby nerd.
Yeah.
Just some nerds. They're not like, of course, all the girls were really hot. And they were all like in their 20s.
No.
They're like sexy.
How?
And they talk like thus. It's a three-body problem. Oh my God. I'm a nanotechnology expert. No, you're not. I'm not saying hot ladies can't be smart. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
But if you're going to do the hot lady scientist trope, which I enjoy, everyone else can't be hot. Pick one. You get one hot person.
Have you ever been in a single room where every single person is like drop dead, like fucking model Esquire hot?
I was a model once.
Well, you know what? I'm a normal room.
Well, no.
Exactly. People are all different sizes, all different shapes,
all
different things.
I'm so tired of the homogenization of like hot folks. Everybody look like Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah.
I don't like Timothy Chalamet.
I don't
care. Have you seen the meme where it's like every time I think of Timothy Chalamet, I picture this shoe and it's like a medieval pike style shoe. It do look like a Timothy Chalamet.
Those shoes are so weird.
He's the star of Dune.
I
liked the Dune movie, the new one. Quite good. I liked the Dune books. I just want to know if they're... Where are my nerds at? Somebody get in the Discord and talk to me about nerdy shit. Because look, I try to go into Reddit spaces for nerds and it's just dudes. Ugh. And I can't cope. So I just need some nerds. Come talk science with me. Come talk aliens.
I won't. I mean, I'll talk aliens and shit, but.
No, and then.
I mean, I love science. I need science for everything and always, but it's so far over my head that I don't.
Let me give you the premise of this. Is like the aliens get. If you've not watched a three body problem, turn this off right now because I'm spoiling it. 3, 2, 1, you've been warned. Okay, so the aliens, at first, you're kind of nice to us. Like, we're going to come live on your planet, too, because ours is lame. And they're like, yeah, sure, do it. Then they realize we can lie, and they're like, well, now we don't trust you, so we're going to kill you. So you mean to tell me you're an old-ass civilization that has developed slightly faster than light space travel and computers capable of doing near miraculous things, and you didn't realize that folks lie? You're a dumb bitch. I was done with the show after that. I was done. It was in the books, too, but to be fair, it was presented a little bit better. But still, does that not kind of piss you off as a premise? It's stupid. I feel like you can't bring all this, like, smarty pants science in here and then throw out, well, you guys lying. That's not fair. Fuck off, aliens. Ugh. Anyway, just somebody make a good show. Just one.
Yeah.
Like, The Good Place is over.
I cried my eyes out at that ending. I was fuck that so ending. Mad.
I'm still pissed. I mean, not it was okay. Good, but it pissed me off. Made me sad.
It's not good. It's not a good ending.
It is.
Don't like it. And I'm mad about it.
I think it's the best sort of ending.
That's
you could
what everyone
for.
Has to say to comfort me. And I just
don't
want
to. I'm not trying
to
comfort
it.
Your ass. It had to end. And that's, I guess, the only way they could think to end it. Whatever.
It didn't have to.
See, here's my thing, is if you're just going to live forever, then just do some role play to spice it up.
Go see
well, I'm
some
Genghis
shit.
Khan
go
this
shit.
Week, honey. Prepare to get raided and plundered and whatnot. Hey, make it fun, sexy. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, I can think of a million scenarios. I don't know. I just need a good show. Like, I like The Last of Us, but I've played the game, so I know the next season's just going to piss me off, so I can't watch
when
that.
When does the next season come out?
Pretty soon.
I've
next year,
been waiting.
Or end of the year or something. God. You're not, you don't know what's going to happen.
No,
do you?
I don't, because I don't play video games because I can't even walk in.
You're
them.
Not going to want to watch that fucking,
and
you're not going to want to fucking watch it.
I know.
It.
And
it's going to piss you off super
I
bad.
I hate watching shows where you have to wait for the next season to come out. I want to wait till the entire show is done and over with. Everybody's gone
I'm
home.
Usually the same way, but with The Last of Us, I knew I would only want to watch the first season.
Oh,
I absolutely
you knew. What
I know
what's
going
into.
To happen. It's going to make me too sad and mad, and I don't want to watch it. But I need something. I ain't got nothing. I ain't got nothing to watch. And listen, I watched that True Detective, Night Country. If you have a show that says the name of the show in the show, it's garbage. Fuck that show. Fuck you, Jodie Foster. You let me down.
Oh, no, Jodie Foster.
She let me down.
Oh, no.
It's the dumbest shit I ever
oh,
did
no.
see. And let me tell you something, friends. I'd never seen no True Detective. And everybody's like, the first season's so good. No, it weren't.
Well, like the real True Detective, where it's like the true crime show.
No, this is a drama show.
Because I love True
it
Detective.
It had Matthew
like,
McConaughey. And Woody Harrelson, that blockheaded rube. And they were both just talking like this about serious man stuff. And I was just like, oh, kill me. Spare me this pretentious drivel.
Does she play a straight woman?
Jodie Foster plays a straight woman. I did not
every
have no problem
single
with
time
that.
And I feel bad. I'm just like, man, give
yeah,
her.
She's an actress. It's
I
fine.
I mean, I guess, but.
She can do it. Know. She can. I mean. But here's the thing, too. Okay, so you have a strong female character, and she likes to fuck, and she likes to drink, and she likes to smoke and fight. I'm so sick of that. Look, y'all, I may seem like that type of person to you, but I am not. I do not smoke. I do not drink. I'm a frilly bitch, but I'm strong as fuck. Where's that? Where's that trope? Frilly strong bitch. Anyway, it was someone get on Discord so I can complain about how much I hated Night Country. God damn it. It's pathetic. It's bad. It should be canceled and someone should be fired. Or killed, perhaps. I'm just so angry. Anyway, I'm done
you
ranting.
You just said we don't condone murder.
I do for this. Make an exception.
Make an exception.
I've wasted many hours of my life. I want them back. If I can't have them back, I'll take them in blood. That's the type of dialogue that would be on that show, by the way. Somebody pay me. Somebody pay me to write TV. I'd do such a good job. And the ratings would be through the roof. And
I have
you'd
really
have
great
bajillion
movie
billion
ideas.
Dollars.
Oh, yeah. We had that show we were going to make.
It's the cutest fucking idea in all space of time.
Yeah.
Period.
Don't let him know. Don't let
him
know.
I ain't telling fuck all.
Yeah. But you guys should definitely pay us to make this.
It's so good and so heartwarming and sexy and funny and cute.
Help.
Huh?
I'll help direct it.
Will you? Mm-hmm. With all the zero experience you have in directing
Hell
film.
Hell yeah, girl.
Did you take film class?
Nope, but I know what not to do because I know what shitty movies look like, and I'm not going to
anyway,
do that.
I've taken film class. I'll be directing this and writing it as well. I'll throw you some pittance.
Okay.
Okay. And I don't want no Timothy Chalamet's in there. I want real looking folks. Mm-hmm. I want to go find me somebody off the street.
No,
when did that stop happening?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I'll say this. At least in the era of like Hollywood's golden age. Mm-hmm. Yes, the main actors were hot. But everybody else was normal looking.
Yeah.
So it made the main actors look special. Can we go back to that? Can we go? Can I go back to... Why is everyone so skinny also? My God. Those poor... I just feel sorry for the actors. They're probably dizzy. And you know that shit's catered and they can't have none of it. Anyway, please, someone get into Discord. That's all the business I have for today. Yeah. Just join our Discord because I'm this unhinged 24/7.
Yeah, she is.
I am.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop. I wish it would stop. And I'm tired and I'm this way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in a funky mood today, though. Is it just me?
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, no.
See, please, I need someone who can carry a back and forth. A back and forth.
No, I'm just exhausted.
I know. I'm just giving you shit because it's funny. Oh. Anyway, hey, I love you guys. And I'm sorry about Maris Monday, but never fear. I will give you guys a little spoiler. I'll give you a spoiler. Are you ready?
I like spoil me.
It's about Japanese demons.
Ooh.
And there's some funny ones. Like, there's one that has a huge eyeball where its butthole should be.
Really?
And it bends over and surprises people.
Surprise.
It likes to scare them. That's it.
It's just
like, surprise, look into my eye.
My brown eye.
It's not brown.
Oh.
So.
That's weird.
So it's butthole. It's a big old eyeball.
Bye.
Huge, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I just find that kind of shit. It's going to be so funny, y'all. Because I'm stupid. Okay, anyway, bye.
Us on your social media platform of choice. Linktree/cruelty has all of the links. Check out our Patreon for exclusive episodes, merch, ad-free episodes, live ghost hunts, and much more. Please be sure to subscribe. New episodes are uploaded weekly. Thank you so much. See you next time. Music and production by Libby.